We'll go to the COVID-19 update with Kevin.
Hey, good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler, Kevin Roblin here, Deputy Secretary at the Game Fish and Parks. Just wanted to give folks an update on COVID-19, where we're at regarding some of the activities and some of the things that have changed since our last meeting. We did open up all of our offices, our Wildlife Division offices, June 15th. Our Parks and Rec offices were open for that date, but on June 15th, those wildlife offices were open to the public. We are running normal business hours, essentially, and the proper PPE is put in place, the sneeze guards, the hand sanitizer, all those things, using the most precautionary measures we can when having the public interact with staff and vice versa. So that's been going well. Staff have been, fielding questions and having those public interactions, and things have been going well. I just want to thank staff and thank the public for making that all work very well. A couple other things, the outdoors are open. Not a lot has changed there. We continue to urge people to utilize the outdoors, the recreational opportunities that exist in South Dakota. We're very blessed to have so many opportunities, and those opportunities exist today, even with COVID-19 still lingering around. So folks have been definitely taking advantage of those outdoor opportunities. License sales are up. Park visitation is up. It's great to see full parks, and it's great to see a lot of folks out fishing, and we're hoping that carries into the hunting season as well. So a lot of good news coming up in the license sale revenue reports from both the parks and wildlife side, and I won't get too in-depth there because I know they have pretty good news to share later on down the agenda. Unfortunately, I'm switching a little bit of gears. We have had some tragic drownings over the last couple of weeks with recreational users, and these are very tragic situations. And we just urge and really plead with our recreational users to, please wear life jackets while out and about, enjoying your time on the water. And that's something you'll see more messaging from us in the next few weeks, next few months. Actually, we're going to run, I think it's a 12-month campaign of really wearing life jackets. And that's a big part of some of the messaging we want to get out to our recreational users. And not only that, if you're boating alone, utilize those kill switches, making sure if you do get thrown from the watercraft that watercraft automatically shuts off. So we're going to be very, hopefully, more proactive and making sure that message is sent. Do all we can to really make sure we curtail those tragic drownings that we've dealt with here in the last couple of weeks. So with that, I just had a short, brief update, and I'll take any questions if there are any.
Questions? Comments? Kevin, I had one thought or question, I guess. I've been down to Custer State Park twice the last 10 days. Very busy. People across the country are there, and our staff is wearing a mask, like when you stop and get your pay your fee to get in. And inside the buildings, like I was at the Game Lodge and at Legion Lake, and staff there have their masks, but I bet you maybe 95 out of 100 of our customers are not wearing masks. Whether they're inside or outside. And I just wonder, I don't remember what the CDC says about that sort of interaction. I don't know if we have any rules about it or what maybe the department has considered with regard to requiring masks for everyone when they're inside. Because, those buildings aren't very big and there's no social distancing that, as a practical matter, can go on in a gift shop.
Yeah, that's a great question, Mr. Chairman. And at the end of the day, we are asking all of our staff that have direct interaction, constant interaction with the public, to be wearing masks, as you mentioned, or as you stated there, and they are. Currently, there are no rules or regulations for the users to wear masks, and I don't see us putting those rules or regulations in place, especially in those types of facilities. And you're right. I mean, we ask people to take personal responsibility and social distance the best they can, wash their hands, obviously, and do all those other practices. the best they can. And I agree. I was just at Sylvan Lake a couple weeks ago camping there with my family, and it was kind of a mix, you know, folks with masks and without masks. And that is kind of what's happening across the landscape.
Do you remember, I mean, what does the CDC say, or what are their guidelines when we're talking about that setting and people coming inside to these gift shops or restaurants or whatever?
You know, in situations where social distancing is difficult to do, the CDC is now recommending the use of masks. In those situations where people are in close quarters for a long period of time. I mean, a lot of times what we're learning about this virus, it's something new every day, and I'm no expert at it whatsoever, but you know, almost 15 minutes of direct interaction with an individual sometimes is what it takes to, you know, contract the disease, or at least that's the most recent research that we've seen. Masks do help, but they're not an end-all, be-all either.
I can't remember. Do we have signs that are urging people to do it, or are we just not addressing it at all?
Our signage mostly includes social distancing and hand washing. Those would be the two activities, I guess, we are definitely pushing hard. We're also using those sneeze guards at all of our point of sale, point of contact locations, to making sure there's that separation between our employees and the public. So those would be the practices we're currently conducting.
Would there be any downside to requiring people to wear masks when they come in? So they're relatively confined spaces, really, the lodges and the gift shops and whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, at this time, as the situation evolves, maybe that will be the case. But at this time, we really feel like, I think the measures we have in place are mitigating the disease to the best of our abilities. And maybe in the future, that might change.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? All right, let's go to flood recovery funding. Scott Simpson.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, Secretary Hepler, Commissioners. Just wanted to give you a quick update on some creative financing that we're going to be able to use to help with some of the recovery or the flooding issues that we experienced last summer, last spring. Take you back to the most recent legislative session, and at the request of the governor, the legislature passed a funding bill that makes available some funds through the Department of Public Safety, makes them available for entities that were impacted by last year's flooding. We qualify for that, and we have been actively pursuing for the last few months the opportunity to take advantage of some of these dollars to help us speed up the process and take care of some of those flooding impacts from last year. We're just getting started now as far as starting. We're kind of at the end of where we might see some of these dollars come back in. So I have a specific example that I want to use to kind of give you an idea of how this process is going to work going forward. The bridge that we had washed out down at Randall Creek, you guys are all familiar with that. We've shown you the pictures. We've told you the price tags, about $2.4 million worth of damage down there to put a new bridge in, which basically shut down a campground for a full season last year. Well, we made the space within our budget to go out there and put that contract in place, and we've since got that bridge put in place middle of June, I believe it was end of June when we got that bridge finally back open. But as I said, the price tag on this thing is about $2.4 million. Obviously, if we have to take $2.4 million worth of cash and lay it out there, we're not going to be able to get to very many of these projects very quickly. So what this legislation does is it allows us to submit for reimbursement these projects that were impacted by the flood. So we send the $2.4 million over to the Department of Public Safety. They actually reimburse us about 90% of the cost of that project. We then have about 18 months, or excuse me, 8.5 years to pay back that whatever that 90% of $2.4 million is, right around $2 million. It really allows us to jump on these projects and start moving them forward in the process. In the meantime, it puts the cash back in our general fund or our 3125 fund. It gives us some more dollars to work with so we can take care of some of these other projects. But at the same time, it allows for some time for FEMA to step in, and hopefully, we're working through this FEMA process. Hopefully, they're going to come in with their 75% match. If that happens, those dollars would go directly to public safety. Then we would only be on the line for 75% of those costs, which dramatically reduces the amount of debt that we would have to repay to public safety. Those dollars would likely come into the department anyway, so that's kind of all a wash. But really what this does is it allows us not to tie up so many cash dollars in some of these big projects and allows us to keep moving forward with regularly scheduled maintenance, road projects, some of these other flooding impacts that we've had. And we've identified about $14 million worth of projects that we believe are probably eligible for this program. We likely will not submit all those. Some of them are smaller and don't require the additional time for us to pay for them. So those smaller ones we'll probably just work through. But some of these larger ones, when you talk about the bridge, Lake Alvin, Minor Lake, some road damages that we had, I mean, they really start to add up in a hurry. And you're talking about a few million dollars in some cases for each project. This is really a lifeline for us, and it'll allow us to, like I said, move forward with these projects a little bit quicker. We don't have to wait for the FEMA process to move forward. We hope that comes in on the backside and relieves some of that financial burden that we've got. But if it doesn't, it still allows us 8 years to pay for those projects, which fits a little better into our budget. So anyway, just wanted to give you a little heads up that we've got that out there. We're going to be taking advantage of it. And it will likely have an impact on some of the projects that you see moving forward here. So, Chris, I see you're on here. Did I miss anything that hopefully covered most of it?
No, Scott, I think you did a good job covering everything. What the commission will probably see as we start building our next year's budget, that because this money from public safety is coming back to us like a loan, that you'll see us having conversations with the commission going forward through this summer and fall about putting budget authority in your capital development budget to cover the cost of these projects. So that'll come, but they can be comfortable knowing that these loan funds are there to cover the cost as well.
So, Mr. Chair, I think that's about all we wanted to cover. Just let you know, like I said, that this additional mechanism is out there and that we'll be taking advantage of it. Like I said, we haven't seen the first dollar come our way yet. PD and I have been kind of patiently waiting, and it's any day now. And then we'll move on down the list of some of these other projects that we've got in the works. And it's a really good deal for us. We really appreciate the governor getting behind this, the legislature getting behind this, and it's going to make this process a lot easier for us.
Okay. Thanks. Questions? Comments? For Scott or Chris? Seeing none,